Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on a Tuesday. Battleborn Injury Lures is the location. Adam Hill is here. What's going on, Adam?
Starting off, I feel like we have new new entrance music.
Changes are happening all over the place.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Onward and upward, onward and upward. That's always the terminology in sports and at Lotus Broadcasting. Adam Hill across the way, James back on the board at the Findlay Toyota Studios. We're here at Battleborn on a Tuesday. Justin Watkins will be in a little bit. We have a lot to get into in terms of legal questions around the world of college football. Things are changing. We're hearing private equity. It's funny. There's a breaking story on private equity and Utah, and it comes on the heels of a mega deal that UNLV just cut for jersey sponsorship and field logo sponsorship, but more importantly, the jersey patch. And it's the first of its kind in college football. And then Utah kind of came over the top with this private equity thing, which who knows what it's going to be worth. I don't know if my phone was reading the internet's mind or knew about breaking news, but for some reason last night I got on a rabbit hole or down a rabbit hole on the algo on TikTok. And all it was talking about is how awful private equity has been for restaurants and fast food.
Yeah. For customers.
Restaurants all over the place are just horrific now. And portions are getting smaller. Food's getting more expensive. I don't really do fast food, so I don't know if the quality is down. I know one of the subjoints has been hit real hard by this notion that it sucks now because private equity took it over. I got a sub from another place last week, which is probably the first sub I've had in a year. And it was okay. I didn't notice any difference. But that one has not been purchased. But it's this whole movement where, I don't know, what was it, about 4 months ago, maybe longer, 6 months ago, we had this whole anti-Vegas thing, like Vegas is a ripoff, Vegas is a ripoff, Vegas is a ripoff, Vegas is empty, it's empty, it's empty, it's empty, it's empty. And it starts to pick up a little bit of steam. Is it real steam or is it just internet steam? And I kind of wonder if, I mean, the claim is that some of the restaurants, some of the big fast food or, you know, quick serve joints have taken a hit, that people just aren't going anymore.
Yeah, New York Mets, not good, not a good someplace anymore. close. I think you see it, and I think, you know, you saw it today, even the speculation. We'll get into the private equity deal, but, you know, there was a lot of people saying, like, this is how private equity operates. Wait till you see what they do with college sports. And it's like, why do you have 85 scholarship guys? Like, have, like, 75 and then use some AI for, like, practice, you know, practice dummies and have them robot it, like, probably the right idea in terms of if
less kids opportunities,
if it's just
maximize profits.
Yeah. If it's just about making money, which is what private equity is. And yeah, it's great for, on the surface, it's great for a school like Utah to have, $500 million investment. Nice.
What happens?
We'll see what happens.
Control of your program
and conferences. I mean, you know, obviously you and I are both fans of schools in the Big Ten, and there's been a big push for private equity to acquire the Big Ten. And some of the schools are like, no. Not good. It's not good. And there's been kind of a fight and pushback from that because of those reasons.
So I know you're working on some stuff for private equity, potentially for some stories. NBA Cup has kind of crept up on us.
Yeah.
How big an event is it?
I mean, I think it should be big for people in Las Vegas. You know, an NBA in-season title, you know, a tournament that was created a couple of years ago, and it's decided here in Las Vegas, and I think people should be more maybe fired up than they are. I know that there is like a segment that is super excited and will turn out and watch the games, but you just don't, it's not the kind of event you feel a lot of buzz about, you know, when you're around town of like, oh, the NBA Cup's coming. Although you probably should. I mean, there's a chance that a record is broken this weekend. The Oklahoma City Thunder are off to like the best start in NBA history. They can tie it tomorrow in the quarterfinal and potentially go on and, you know, be 25, 26, 27 and 1 by the end of the weekend here in Las Vegas.
You know, there's props up already for OKC breaking the overall season win record.
Probably a favorite at this point, right?
No. To go 74 and
they
eight?
Just don't lose.
It's a long season.
Long season.
We'll look up the number. You would bet over? If it was 73.5?
If it's an underdog, I probably would, yeah.
Okay, we'll look it up.
They seem to be interested in breaking it.
Well, that's the thing, though. As the season goes along, if they're out to a, whatever, a 60 and... I don't even, 60
and 2?
This is stupid to even say that. I know, I was going to say it. I'm like, they're not going 60 and 2.
Okay.
You just have too many road trips, too many long nights. By the way, it's in a league. I think the league should be trumpeting the start because it's in a league where, especially non-NBA fans love to talk about load management. Sure. They're, you know, they have you-know-what-ons about load management. All right, here's a team that freaking cares, so embrace them. I still wonder if the Thunder go, say they do go 70, you know, 70 wins and they win another title. Is it good for the NBA? Because I think Goliath has always been good for the NBA, but do they have the stars? Is OKC too small?
Middle of the country. Probably not good.
You think?
Yeah, it's probably
like
not.
A dominant team has always worked in the NBA.
Well, when it's a big city. Or an ultra star.
They have to have a mega star. Because it doesn't have to be a big city, because Cleveland's not a big city.
Because Shea should be a big star.
Why isn't he?
Canadian? I don't know. I'm kidding.
Do we also ruin things? We talked about, you know, TikTok and algorithms. Do we also ruin things by giving too many people voices? And
probably.
I'm not one to sit here and say as a sports talk host that I'm the only one who deserves to have a voice or that, you know, you're eminently qualified and others aren't. But
well, this is the
sometimes argument. There isn't a whole lot of nuance on social media when SGA has, you know, an awesome playoffs, and then one of the big sticking points is that he draws a lot of fouls, and that somehow he's an a-hole for doing it.
Well, this is an argument that we've had with you for a long time because you've been an advocate of the TikTok commentator in general. I don't mean one specific one. You love that, and I think that is a problem.
I love hot takes, but I can see where it's going. It goes in one direction. Like I just said, I want to be fair on, listen, I don't think we have to feel bad for whatever private equity is. But I also, when people say, hey, that's ruining these restaurants and fast food restaurants, I don't go to all these places. So I don't know if it's being ruined. I don't believe Vegas is like dead. Now we've taken a hit. So again, to use that word nuance, sometimes you just get an avalanche on one side on the internets. And like SGA is not popular because he fakes his way into fouls. Like, does everyone think that? Or is it like 10%, 5%, 1%, 70%?
It's a fair question. And also, like, sometimes things just get into the, like, somehow seep into the consciousness or even to the Twitterverse or just the AI world in general. I mean, it's kind of a side note, but kind of similar in terms of where we're going in terms of you saw the TSN issues. But they're using AI reporters at some point. And
what is that?
So there's a story that was AI generated on TSN that
what's TSN?
Sports network. It's Canadian, the Canadian ESPN.
Okay.
I don't know what exactly it stands for, but TSN is the Canadian ESPN. Essentially, they had a story that clearly was AI generated that is about a player that got injured, and it said he won the MVP award 2 years ago. No, he didn't. Not even close. What are you talking about?
Wait, how did this report get out with any, no one checked it?
No. But now if you ask Grok or you ask one of the AI tools, it says, yes, according to this story that happened. You're like, no.
Who's the player?
Kid from Utah. And I'm trying to think who it is right now. And I don't think it was MVP. I think it was he was the scoring leader.
Like Lauri Markkanen?
No. No, it's hockey. From the Mammoth.
Okay.
Just like a regular player. And all of a sudden now, like if you ask the AI, it cites this story and says, yes, it's true. Like, no, you came up with that story. Now you're also telling us that. And like those things like persist. And now there is like, okay, in the conversation, because people love to, if you look on social media, anything you put out there, people ask if it's true to AI. Like, is this true? I talked about this, you know, a couple weeks ago that I tweeted something from a locker. I asked a player something, tweeted his response from a locker. The first response was, @Grok, is this true? Like, I'm standing with him. Like, what are you talking about? That's, and then Grok said it wasn't because it wasn't anywhere else.
Right.
And you're like, okay, so you, I literally
it's
just
not,
tweeted.
It's not in the system yet.
Right. So, there's that too.
Did people come at you and say it was a lie?
There was just people questioning the source. Like, where'd you get this from? I'm like, I'm here.
Me.
I'm here.
I'm the source.
And but then, you know, you get that. So it's these conversations or these things that are out there, and then people don't even. So I think people would ask, hey, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, just the benefit of bad officiating or get too many fouls. I'm like, yes. And then people just take that as truth.
Now I want to do the research to see how widespread that is.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. Okay. I'm curious to see. OKC is obviously awesome. They obviously care. They have great players. They're young. They have more draft picks coming. They continue to freaking kick ass with scouting. So like every time you look up, you're like, wait, where'd this guy come from? And they have two of the best scorers in the NBA. And yeah. Chet Holmgren is now moving into, you know, his mid-20s, and he's starting, if he's healthy, he's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
They're great.
But the conversation, I just want to tie it back to the first thing you started with, private equity with this, too. It gets in, because I think you were kind of referencing it, but there is, I knew exactly what you were talking about when you talked about the sandwich place.
Yeah.
I've heard it, haven't been there, and I probably won't, because I've heard everybody saying, it sucks now.
See, I'm actually...
So now
I'm
assume it does.
I toggle back and forth. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No.
I toggle back and forth. I'm like, maybe I should give him a chance. But then...
You're wasting your money.
Well, what's happening to me now is I go in to restaurants and fast food places like with expectations that it's going to suck. Because I see it so much on social media that maybe I'm going to misjudge what I get and it's not bad. But I'm like, this is
low bar. Crappy.
Well, maybe, yeah. Low bar, and then that I'm judging it and it's not good enough or... I mean, everything has gotten more expensive. So I'm a cheap ass, so I've noticed that. There are times I will go to the grocery store, and I'm like, well, I'm not getting that this time because that ain't worth it. I'm like, I don't know where I was the last 6 months, but that went through the freaking roof.
I noticed it last night. I was at a store for the first time in a while, and I was like, okay. I don't think that's what this costs, but okay. I guess what it is.
I feel like basics like bleach and vinegar, I know it sounds really weird, like went through the roof.
Okay.
What's happening?
Well, it's a hoax.
What, the prices are up?
Affordability is a
hoax. It's all hoax.
It's a hoax.
Well, I don't know. I'm on the ground. I kind of see it. Kind of notice my money, the value of it, shrinking a little bit. Speaking of the value of something shrinking, the value if you bet the Eagles to win the NFC or the Super Bowl, are you feeling good right now? Because I'm incredibly patient when it comes to the NFL, and teams get into bad runs, but that was garbage last night. And they were going against Philly, was facing a very hampered Chargers team. I don't know how Herbert got through that game. I thought that was incredible the way he played, you know, with the limitations. But on the other side, man, I keep hearing guys, and, you know, I've compared Rex Ryan to Tommy Boy. You know, it's just like, laughing all the time. And, you know, on the set, he's just big guy in a little coat and just says stupid stuff to get everyone to laugh. But he started in on this a while ago on the heels of Orlovsky on ESPN's morning show on TV. And it was like, this offense is boring. This offense is predictable. This offense doesn't use any motion. And as I'm watching last night, I'm like, how many times are you going to target A.J. Brown? He's not making catches. There were times when I was like, I don't know if his effort's even there. He's the one who was pissing and moaning about getting the ball. And now it seems like they've over-adjusted. I mean, Devontae Smith did have a big catch late, but... So many of the targets. I think he had 13 targets. The offense is lame. They just look so ordinary right now. And I understand their offensive line's beat up, but is it that beat up?
They can't run the ball. That's the
other Chargers line is beat up.
Yeah. They just can't run it. And that's what the whole offense is based on.
And that changes everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so this goes back to the Raiders discussion. If you can't run it, can you still run play action? Because that was the whole thing that people got on chip about, like, you got to keep doing it or you don't do it. What's the answer?
Well, you still can when you have Saquon Barkley, I think, too. I mean, they think you're going to run it. So, I think the bigger problem is, like, it's another example. A great running back can't fix a running game. Raiders. You don't fix a running game by just getting a good running back. Raiders. But, yeah, in this case, Saquon is obviously very good when the conditions are there. They're not there. But, yes, you can still, especially because he's a threat. He showed last night he can still be a threat at times, breaks one off and gets a score, and, you know, you can run it off that. But you can do it.
Yeah.
And I think you can run it, especially early down, play action. Like, I think it probably works. But it's just more accuracy right now is an issue.
Yeah, I want to talk about Hurts more on the 5 o'clock hour. Let's talk about Herbert, who was inaccurate at times, completed some key passes, is playing with whatever that glove is and whatever level of broken hand he's got on the left. If he ran one more freaking time, putting himself in harm's way, and then late in the game, he runs and he puts out his left hand to straight arm. I'm like, what are you doing? But he is, he's this weird cyborg. Because even after the game, Harbaugh loves him.
Yeah.
And I almost think, do you think Harbaugh amps it up because Herbert is not Harbaugh? Or do you think Harbaugh just can't control himself? And I mean amp it up, like, one of the things we notice all the time, and I say we because the SO, I mention all the time, the significant other, is a Chargers fan. We notice before the games, you'll see Harbaugh come up to Herbert, and he starts hitting him on the pads and on the sides, and he's getting him ready, and he's going in. And it, like, Herbert's like, okay, like, what the hell's going on here? After the game, they meet each other on the field, and Herbert's just got a look on his face like, okay, solid game. And Harbaugh's just like, like yelling in front of him. And Herbert's
right,
like,
after he had shaken hands.
Right. Or, like, Herbert's like, what? Which brings me to a topic. I didn't know you were going to be on this, but I had a feeling you'd be on it. Because yesterday I mentioned to Jeff Parles, hey, this draft, this kid Mendoza, I saw him do a pregame interview, and I'm like, whoa, okay. Then postgame got real weird. What'd you think of immediately?
Well, even more. I've watched a lot, and I actually had a group text where there was a lot of exchanging of Mendoza interviews this morning.
Oh, really?
And he is Kirk Cousins.
Okay, hold that thought. Because I started the topic yesterday, and I want your take on it. I think there will be NFL people. This guy may be the guaranteed best quarterback going to this draft, and he's going to be sliced and diced so much. And some interviews he does, I think there are going to be NFL personnel people who are like, we're out. He's a dork.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
That was a bad break. We discussed a lot of things. And, man, when you and I are together, it's mean times, baby. Mean times. Adam Hill is here. It's Cofield. Battleborn. Injury Lawyers, Battleborn Broadcast Center. Justin Watkins coming up around 4:30. So we were just talking about what we saw last night on Monday Night Football. Jalen Hurts, good quarterback, great character guy, gamer. They don't have a running game. That changes the whole thing for him. Justin Herbert is a freaking cyborg. He was beat to hell yesterday. He's getting beat to hell because the O-line still stinks because they're all injured. He's out there with a broken left hand, and he's throwing stiff arms, and I felt like he carried it 20 times, like an option quarterback, but he dropped back and split the line a bunch of times to gain yardage. He was effective. And then after the game, he's never really happy. Like, he doesn't celebrate. He'll have like a little wry smile, and then Harbaugh is like going crazy, because that's who Harbaugh is. And it's not exactly a direct comparison, but I will go back to the Herbert draft. And I think there were a lot of teams who were like, we don't get this guy. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't have this like over-the-top effusive personality. He might have come off as way too laid back. And then there's the opposite end. And man, when you made the comparison, I'm like, boy, oh boy, that's a good one. This kid, Fernando Mendoza, is pregame and especially postgame interviews around the Indiana-Ohio State game, and you were to show me a bunch of interviews from throughout the season, he is a really, really nice kid. But I don't know if I like him.
Nice
he,
isn't...
He,
nice
might, is... he might drive me over the edge, yeah. And I don't have to make the pick. But you know the way NFL personnel people are. I mean, they are highly, highly critical. And here's the thing. You can comment on this whenever you want, because you're in a different position, because I cover the Raiders, you cover the Raiders. Like, you have to be out there. So this could be on the record. But I have nice things about me, but I'm not a nice person in terms of my patience. And really nice people kind of make me uncomfortable. We've had this conversation before.
Yeah.
Like, who was a... one of our local sportscasters. We have to get him on. We'll have to run this by him. He'll be like, you know, I love
Mendoza. Oh, he's great.
I love Mendoza. Why are we already doing bad voices for
John Trich?
John Trich. He's in Denver now, right? I think. He's
been in a few places.
He was in Charlotte. Yeah. But John, we always used to say to John, like, man, you're like way too nice. And then we got him a couple times off the air to say stuff like that was a little critical of people. And we're like, all right.
But it took a
while. We're back.
Well, he had never had a soda before. That's one thing. I think at that point, you're just not jaded enough yet in the world.
Mendoza is going to be really interesting case study because his skill set is going to have him potentially as a top quarterback drafted first three round guy. But when he goes and does interviews, I think every coaching staff is going to be a little bit different. Some are going to fall in love with him. I think others are going to be like, wait, is this real? I don't like him. It makes me uncomfortable.
I think the first reaction from almost anybody is this isn't real. It's an act. And maybe it's not.
But you compared him to Kirk Cousins.
He's Kirk Cousins.
I like Kirk Cousins for the most part. I will say on those quarterback reality shows, it got a little bit grating.
Oh, very grating.
Well, I know you can't stand him.
No.
And that might be who Mendoza is.
He's him.
Yeah.
With a lowercase h, I think. He's him.
So he's all about, is he all about the slacks, the plaid shirts, and is it Nickelback or Coldplay?
He loves Coldplay. Mendoza does.
It's both.
Both. But he loves Coldplay. We know that. We heard him talk about it. He is, I think, wait, to your point.
Like, I hate this so much.
I don't think you're nice. You're not a nice or good person. No, I think there's.
I try to leave a little bit of room.
Sure.
But I do get irked when it's just over the top.
Well, I feel like. Stop. I'm just going to say, like, I do feel like I'm a good person, but I don't think I'm necessarily a nice person.
Okay.
Like, that's not, I mean, I'm polite. It's just weird. I guess there's just a difference.
You're irked between, in a lot of the same ways I am.
Right. You can be annoyed, but I'll get annoyed by a lot of things. He seems like the kind of person that you could not possibly annoy him. Like, you just, like, poke him 100 times, and he was, hey, man, that's awesome. You have such a great finger. Like, what? Stop. Like, what? Come on. Like, that's what he seems like. And I do feel, first of all, I don't know. I guess when you're in a locker room and you're making plays, it's different. And, like, you can be a leader and guys will go behind you because you're making plays and they see that. But, like, day one, I think there's going to be a lot of, you got to prove this. Like, we're not just going to accept this nonsense. Like, you have to prove that you can back up with, you can be a dog on the field and not whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And I do think because of that attitude, he's going to have to prove that, which I think he can. Like, his tape is fantastic. His talent is phenomenal. And I think that for that reason, he's probably going to be the first pick. But I do think there will be NFL people that are like, no. No. And most of them are going to be people that aren't in a position to draft him anyway. Right? You're like, I don't know. Like, the ones that are actually up there, and the Raiders are probably going to be one of them, are going to have to really get to know him, really dig into what makes him tick, what makes him, like, maybe, who knows? There's got to be something that is there. There's got to be a way to, you know, get him to, you know, to get worked up a little bit or whatever. But that like, oh, shucks. Like, that stuff, it doesn't play right away to me.
Well, we got so much to get to. Oh, shucks, is coming back. Phillip Rivers coming back to the NFL. On the way back, though, it's a couple of days removed, but there's a lot of storylines that came out of that weird World Cup draw program. Was someone sauced on live TV?
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So we're a few days removed from that World Cup draw, and it was weird on a lot of fronts. We'll get to some of the matchups, the groups. But the mix of hosts who were pulling the countries, that got a little odd, especially since Wayne Gretzky obviously hasn't really read up on any. I don't even know how to describe it. Just
never looked at a map.
Geography. He's never discussed any countries. Some pronunciation issues.
You would have thought that going into this, which is like the most watched thing ever, it's like a billion people watching it live.
By the way, how many teams are in it? How many countries are in it? 32?
Expanded this year.
So what is it up to, like 40?
It's 48.
Okay. It would take 5 minutes to go over all 48 countries.
Yeah.
And I would assume 35 by the way, are easy to pronounce.
Didn't have to because he only had one pot.
Oh, okay.
So he did have the toughest one, which he said during the show, because everybody else had the 12.
Wait, how many countries did he have to announce?
So he had to do 12, okay. But four of them have not played their playoffs yet, right? So there's four. So you'd pick a country, and it might either be one country or a choice of four that could possibly be there. Mm. So he had four that were extra, that four countries on.
Are we being too hard on him?
No, because like I'm saying, he didn't have to study all 48. He could have studied just the ones in his group, or even gone to somebody and said, hey, these are the ones I have to read from. These are the tricky ones. But it wasn't even the tricky ones. And I think he just got too caught up because he was so flustered. But he got to, like, Jordan. Got it wrong.
That Jordan. Was crazy. Jordan. Jordan Hudson.
Caracal. Like, no, that's Curacao. But,
oh, look at you. I heard some rolling at the beginning.
Yeah. But he didn't have to do that. Just get it close.
It's kind of a big world event. You might, like, people right. back in those countries watching, give them a little bit of respect. Wasn't there a Macedonia?
Yeah, potentially their first North Macedonia. But potentially their first ever World Cup.
I just said 10 minutes ago, I'm not nice, so I'm overdoing it. You're right. People could look at, isn't Macedonia spelled M-A-C-E, Donia?
Yeah.
When is M-A-C-E? When is A-C-E, Ack?
Ack. Macedonia.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's some Eastern European pronunciation that he's aware of.
Just look. If there's one that you don't know.
It's so dumb that we're annoyed about this.
Hey, how do you say
if
this?
If I'm from Caraco, I'm annoyed that you can't say Curacao.
Caraco. Like, this is their big moment. Now, a lot of the countries, they're not allowed in the country to watch their team anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter. But it would be nice on the draw show to have your name said properly.
Yes. More on the World Cup. Some promoted matches. Maybe didn't get the best countries to match the promotion. That's coming up. But we had UFC reach a moment in history. The final pay-per-view, at least for now, it was a pretty good fight card. RJ Clifford's going to check in, talk some Raiders. He's the host of the Autumn Windbags podcast and also UFC in this last card here in town. All right, let's get into a little Raiders and lots of UFC and MMA. RJ Clifford joins us every Tuesday. It's Adam Hill. It's Cofield. What's up, RJ?
How we doing, boys?
Pretty good. Coming off a solid UFC card to close out the run on pay-per-view. We want to get into the future and what the whole deal is going to look like with Paramount. But let's talk about some of these fights on the UFC card that just passed. Merab, what happened to Merab?
So the storyline that everyone's been running with, actually everyone's kind of just running with the storyline that makes like their theories about him right. And I think I'm in that same boat. But I think the people are talking about like, oh, you know, four title fights in 1 year. I know Merab's a machine, but it just wore on him. You know, he's sparring the morning of fights. He's a maniac. It finally caught up on him. I agree. I think Piotr Jan is just that good. I think we forgot how good Piotr Jan was when he was champion. He just ran into a terrible stylistic matchup in Aljamain Sterling. Jan is the very first guy that's been able to punish Merab's takedown attempts instead of just defending them. In mixed martial arts, you don't get points for for defense. And there is points awarded for action. And so if Merab is just constantly shooting on you and you're just defending, you're losing those exchanges. Jan was the very first guy to punish him. And when he did get taken down, he was up right away. Like, he anti-wrestled pretty well, and he was able to get up right away and punish him. So I don't want people thinking that this was a Merab that just didn't show up or a burnt-out up. He does.
I mean, I couldn't both be true. I know that Merab does what he does, and he's just a psychotic person, but the sparring on the morning of the fight is just, it's wild, especially when you're in a fourth title fight in a year.
Yeah, it's completely idiotic, but he does it all the time, and it hasn't stopped him before. I think the curveball here is, and I talked about it when Merab had his rematch with Sean O'Malley. Fighting Merab Dvalishvili is unlike fighting anyone else in mixed martial arts. And I kind of thought about this with Khabib Nurmagomedov, and I feel like I think Khabib retired early, and it gave him an advantage that he never had to do a rematch, because once you felt a fighter like Khabib, it's hard. You can't really train for it. You can't really mentally prepare for it. You don't know what it's like until you do it. Merab's in the same vein. So I always wondered how it would go with rematches. Sean O'Malley wasn't equipped to handle it. But I think Piotr Jan, yes, I think there was the hand injury the first time, which played a part. But I really think that once Jan got to experience Merab, he was exponentially more prepared the second time. Whereas Merab isn't going to adjust in a rematch. He fights how he fights. opponents, like when Barab starts doing some more rematches, I'm going to be very curious to see how guys do in the second hand once they've already experienced him.
Well, will his next fight be a trilogy? Will they fight again?
I don't see why not. I think they absolutely should. I think it's, I believe it's the last six or maybe seven UFC champions that had three or more title defenses. Once they lost, they got an immediate rematch. I think it's six-ish, I think, are the last in a row. The UFC is really good about making sure that, hey, these guys are, you know, these champions that are longstanding. You got to kind of have to beat them twice because they've earned that X. So I don't match that was a fighter contender. I know Umar Nurmagomedov has some business coming up. If he wins, he'd be nice for that as well. To me, I think Barab takes a little time off, which he never does, and you do that fight at the White House.
What was the Pantoja injury?
That depends who you ask, right? I mean, to everybody watching, it was a dislocated elbow. To what degree, who knows? That's for a doctor to decide. But everyone from the UFC was saying shoulder. So maybe it's a combination of both. Obviously, when you have an elbow go out of place like that, that's not, you know, that might not be the primary injury, but it was certainly something that happened. That's some weird. It's weird, right, Cofield, how that you can't just get a basic injury report? That was weird.
It probably was multiple things. I think that's probably part of the problem, right? I mean, it, often in a case like that, it's compound or it's multiple different areas. And that's how I felt when I was writing it afterward. I just said arm because I don't think it's easy to, you know, to get down to the bottom of what it actually was. And I think it could be a lot of things.
Yeah, it was gross. Like the 17 different replays and multiple angles. It's like, oh, God, what are you guys doing? Leave me alone.
Do we get an immediate rematch of that one, Pantoja and Van, or does the Japanese kid who took out Moreno slip in for a fight in between?
I think Tatsu Tyra absolutely slips in if Pantoja takes too long to heal. I think, again, same thing. Pantoja, long-running champion. He's absolutely earned it. Clearly it was – and I generally give more credit to fighters who win via injury because being durable and making it through a mixed martial arts contest is part of the deal. That's part of being a fighter. Like you need to be able to keep fighting for however long the duration of the fight is. But this was as about as fluky as you can get, right? 24 seconds in, he posts his hand. I broke my hand like that in college when I was wrestling in college, very similar way, just posted my hand. The angle was just off enough, and then boom, it's broken and you're done. So if Pantoja can come back, you do an immediate rematch. And if not, Tatsu Tyra is a fantastic first child defense for Joshua Van.
RJ Clifford joins us, as it does each week, and breaks down both MMA and some Raiders that we'll get to in a second. I'm conflicted on this one, so I'm legitimately asking you your opinion of what you thought of Josh Van's celebration, because I think go either way. I mean, look, you trained so hard for so long, and now you're the champion. That's awesome. Go ahead and celebrate. But at the same time, like, bro, you did not do that. Settle down.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe. So I have seven pro fights. And regardless of whether I won or lost, there's one emotion that's always there, and that's relief. Like, it's over. The nerves of it, the danger of it, the pressure that's on your shoulders throughout all of that, like – you know, if you win, it's elation. If you lose, you're pissed. But you're always just like, the weight's off the shoulders this time around. And I think with Joshua Van specifically, like his story was great. How, you know, Burmese American, immigrated here, picked on as a kid, didn't speak English, didn't even know they were, like what they were saying when they were making fun of him. He used the money of his last win to buy his mom a house. He's going to be a millionaire now. Now that he's the champion and that new contract kicks in. So I don't care if, you know, if I knew something happened and it made me a millionaire, I don't care if I did it on purpose or not. I'm celebrating.
I felt this was my, cause I would agree with you. I think in the immediate moment, it's like elation and relief all combined. Like you just let it out. It was after everything settled down and then he's letting his cornerman like put him on his shoulders and carry him around. I was like, all right, man, the initial elation is gone now. Like,
yeah,
let, and there's also a man with an arm, like in nine pieces, like laying in front of you. Like, I don't know. To me, tone it down at that point.
Yeah. I think because of who Joshua Van is, maybe affects my judgment. If it were Conor McGregor, I'd be like, this jerk, what a, come on, what the heck? But because it's Joshua Van, who just a good dude, and he went through so much, and he just has that kind of fan equity with me where I'm not going to – I don't feel like his heart was there. I think he was just purely like, I'm champion. I have this belt. I can't believe it. I'm so happy.
The Paramount Plus here is coming for – UFC. They're now done with ESPN. So one positive, we'll actually know that cards are coming up. I don't know what ESPN was doing down the stretch, because it was like the cards were freaking hidden. Aside from better promotion, and they're going to get great crossover on a big network, do we see some changes? And I'll say aside again from pay-per-view, what are the changes we could see? I wonder what things Dana White has wanted to do that maybe he hasn't been able to do.
Well, I could tell you from like a behind the scenes production standpoint, not a whole lot. I can get into the really itty bitty nuance that 99% of this audience doesn't care about at all. Like, you know, the desk is now going to be ran by UFC Productions of ESPN for pay-per-views, but before it was different, like all this kind of stuff. I don't think a whole lot has changed. From everything I've heard, the Paramount people are saying, look, you guys have been doing this for 30 years. You know what you're doing. We don't want to get in the way. We just want to sell ad space and get money off of what you guys are doing. So I think it's less specifically CBS Paramount, and more what I'm curious about is how the cards are now there isn't a pay-per-view. The numbered events will still be the big ones. There's still more production into it. There's more shoulder programming around it. There's pressers and all this ceremonial weigh-ins and weigh-in shows and all kinds of stuff. But if the pressure isn't to sell pay-per-views, I'm wondering how these cards are going to be constructed. Are they going to be deeper on when it's a numbered event? Are they going to kind of space it out with the fight nights because there's no pay-per-view push or need for that? That's the part I'm most curious about. I don't have a good answer.
There's one big change coming, I think, that people will notice and appreciate. 6 o'clock for main cards.
Yep, 1 hour earlier. 1 hour earlier, yep. Which is great. The key to that one was load-ins. And again, this is the nuance, because the UFC, they don't want, like, the big thing that the Dana White and UFC and fans in general have been mad about with boxing is they'll, you know, The main events will go till 1 a.m, 2 a.m, right? Or sometimes even start that late, and no one wants to do that. So to be able to consistently go into a venue, load it in, and be ready for showtime earlier is going to be the new struggle. So that was always the reason why it took this long to move start times earlier. It wasn't networks. It wasn't, you know, where audiences viewing habits, which is like, can we just get this damn thing up and ready in time if we load in the night before? So it's going to be a challenge, but they're doing it.
We've needed a major rivalry in the sport since Conor mm-hmm. and Khabib really hasn't been it. Do we have it in Jamal Hill and Joanna Jędrzejczyk?
the rivalry we never wanted, but I guess we're going to get.
there was footage of like a real intense situation going on at the fight between them. Mm-hmm. They've both explained their side of the story today, and yep. Jamal Hill's like, I don't know. He did tell the backstory. He said, look, I'll admit it, I'm a guy. I tried to get with her a couple years ago, but we were friendly mm-hmm. after that. His girlfriend was sitting with him at an event. She was trying to be kind of sarcastic to Joanna and said, oh, so you slept with Jamal? And I guess now Joanna saw Jamal without his girlfriend, like, oh, where is she? And like started something. And then he basically threatened her and said, if you touch my girl, I will knock you out. And people are like, oh, that's a girl. Like, yes. Okay.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot going on. It's a crazy, crazy development here, RJ.
It's wild, right? And it's a shame because it's like a quarterback that gets like really, really mouthy with a linebacker. It's like, what are you going to do? You're a quarterback. Like, why are you doing when you have a retired female fighter rivaling with an active light heavyweight? You're like, where is this going to go? Like, what's the point of this? Like, what? We're not going to get a resolution to this. Like, I don't want to know. I would have him like do a debate. Like, how are we, like a game of poker? Like, how are you guys going to squash this? Like, that's. It's like when media members are like fighting each other on Twitter. Like, people get so excited about it. I'm like, what's the end result of this ever gonna be? They're mad on social media. Like, I need a resolution here. I'm a fight fan.
RJ, we got less than a minute left. Did you get wind of the Fernando Mendoza interviews before and after the Indiana game this weekend?
I did. How cheery is this guy?
Let's wrap on this because this is a conversation we already started. And I pointed out Adam and I are not very nice people, and nice people bother us. Adam's a nice person, but they bother us. Can you have a Kirk Cousins-like personality as the leader of the Raiders?
I absolutely love that type of personality for the Raiders.
And this is why.
It's a cesspool over there. 2-11. It's just an absolute mess. If you have to be able to smile and grin through your rookie year. If the Raiders draft Mendoza and things are probably not – hopefully things aren't as bad this next season as they are this season, but they're not going to – things aren't going to get turned around. They're not going to do a 180 in one season, right? You are going to have to be a Labrador retriever to get through the season. And that's exactly who Mendoza is. If he throws a pick, if things are down, there's squabbles going on. We're hearing, you know, coaches are talking to each other, all this kind of stuff. You've got to be able to smile and grin.
Up against it.